Good morning, and welcome to the Ianthus Q1 2019 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Instructions for the question-and-answer session will be provided following the listen-only portion of this call. Before beginning formal remarks, Ianthus would like to remind listeners that today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements that reflect current views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in these forward-looking statements. Ianthus does not undertake to update any forward-looking statements except as required. I'd like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded on May 31st, 2019. I will now turn the call over to Hadley Ford, CEO of Ianthus. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for dialing in to hear about our very exciting first quarter. With me on the phone this morning, I have Julius, our CFO, Pat, our EVP of Ops, and Beth, our Chief Strategy Officer, who will be making some comments later in the presentation. But before I turn it over to Julius to talk about the first quarter, I just had a couple of thoughts. In cannabis today in the United States, we have a choice. We have Ianthus have licenses in 11 states. We can choose to be farmers and trade at about 0.8 times revenue. We can choose to be retailers and trade at 1 to 1.5 times revenue. Or we can choose to be sellers of branded goods and trade at 5 times revenue. We choose to be the last one. And how do we make that happen? The only way to create product brands in today's U.S. market is with a 1936 business model. It's tough to advertise. It's tough to use social media. Clearly, it's against the law federally. There's no national distribution. There's no contract manufacturers on a national basis. So to build a product brand, we have to physically be in front of customers in a bricks and mortar store. We have to have a strong retail presence in great locations in cities that matter. We have to have stores that are open and inviting where our customers can learn about cannabis. We need to delight those customers when they come into our stores. And while our customers are there, we need to delight them with our brands. And we need to take those brands and use other channels to make them available to our customers beyond the reach of our own stores, other retailers, online ordering, delivery, whatever is allowed in the states we are in. And because we have to make our products in every state, if we want our product to be consistent, we better have the ability to replicate our operations in every state. And to make all that happen, you need to pull it together with a great team. So where are we on that plan today? We have 21 stores open with another 47 underway. We have THC and CBD brands that customers ask for by name. We have THC brands carried in more than 110 additional stores beyond our own. We have CBD brands carried in over 1,000 stores, including by well-known national chains. We have over 550 employees dedicated to delighting our customers and creating wealth for our 60,000 shareholders every day, and this is just the beginning. Yes, we had $74 million of annualized revenue in the first quarter, and we're run rating well over $100 million right now, but we're talking about an industry that will allow companies like Ianthus to have billions of dollars of revenue. This is just the beginning. This is why we're so excited by the opportunity. A key building block to this success is being in enough of the right markets on a national scale. Why does that matter? Because if you want a national brand, you need a national presence. Brooklyn, Miami, Las Vegas, these are the cities where awareness and acceptance and the creation of iconic brands will happen. Currently, we are in 11 THC states, and with the reach of our CBD brands, well over 40 states in total. We're competing for over $12 billion of estimated legal CBD and THC sales in 2019. This is the type of exposure you need to build vibrant brand awareness. This brand awareness begins in our own stores, and then we're able to leverage a wholesale model carrying our brands to over 1,100 retail partners across the United States today. One of the questions we always get is if a key step in this strategy is to delight customers with a retail experience, why do you have 6 different retail names? I'm sure many of you on the call saw earlier this month that we announced a unification around B, the Cannabis Store, is our retail name. We're very excited by this. Our stores will build on the pioneering and award-winning retail experience of Beth's Health for Life stores in Arizona and Maryland and provide a welcoming environment where both the curious and the dedicated will feel very comfortable learning about the great products that can be delivered through cannabis. And when customers go into these stores, they'll see our products like Mayflower and MPX brands. MPX is an award-winning brand, asked for by name, and frequently sells for 20% more than competing products. It's penetrated 20% of the stores in Arizona, 30% in Mass, 40% in Nevada, and over 70% in Maryland. Another example of the brand leadership is what Beth and her team have done with CBD for Life. They saw an opportunity well before anyone else could spell CBD and began 4 years ago to develop a real brand for health and beauty and pain relief geared towards women. And they pioneered an operating model in support of that brand vision to ensure their retail partners were not disappointed. They developed products that met defined customer needs. They had it manufactured by a contract manufacturer under strict QA and QC, and they had the products delivered directly to their retail partners such as Of A Kind, Urban Outfitters, and Excel Spa, and were currently carried in over 1,000 stores in the United States. Our team knows how to do this and has shown a proven leadership in retail product branding. We've won awards for our extracts, vapes, CBD products, and the customer experience in our stores. But you can't have a brand if your shelves are empty. Stockouts are endemic in this industry, and you need to be able to deliver. Our production capacity in 2019 is able to support over 175 million of retail sales, and we're currently doubling our capacity in Massachusetts, doubling our capacity in Maryland, and adding over 100,000 square feet of grow capacity in Florida. This type of added capacity, which will bring our ability to deliver over $500 million of retail product in 2020, will help us meet demand in key markets such as New York, New Jersey, and Arizona as they move toward full adult use in the near future and expand the addressable market we serve by as much as $5 billion in sales. All this is great, but nothing happens unless someone makes it happen. The only long-term differentiating advantage a company ever has is its people. Everything else can be copied. That's why on the brand building side, we're very excited to have our new CMO, Neil Calvisbert, who slept in a van as he developed distribution for Quiksilver in Europe at the start of his career, join us this quarter. More recently, he led the marketing effort at Monster Energy, where the team took sales from $1 billion to $3 billion of lifestyle brands and helped drive their stock up 4x during his tenure. To have someone with his skill set and that ability who knows how to carry a lunch pail by sleeping in a van and also knows how to work and develop lifestyle brands that can drive billions of dollars of revenue is the exact right person at the exact right time. This is the type of team that will work for you. We're built to be public. We have the largest float, the most research coverage, the best liquidity as percentage of a market cap. We have no convoluted multi-voting capital structure where you have to worry about who management is aligned with. We're aligned with you. We wake up every day with one focus, to work for our public shareholders. Julius, at this point, I'll hand it over to you to talk through the quarter, and I'll come back on to do some of the Q&A after your comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Hadley. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining. Before I walk everyone through our financial results, I would like to state that our transformational acquisition of MPX Biopharmaceuticals closed in Q1. This transaction was the first public-to-public deal in the U.S. cannabis sector. It's the largest closed transaction to date and was the first and, to my knowledge, the only transaction in the sector that has successfully passed the U.S. Hart-Scott-Rodino Act for antitrust oversight. The work on the transaction started back in the summer of 2018, was announced in October 2018, closed in February 2019, and this is the first quarter where MPX's results are partially consolidated. In Q2, the results of the company will be fully combined. For the first quarter of 2019, our reported revenue was $9.6 million U.S., which is up 384% from Q4. Our reported revenue includes the full Q1 results from the legacy Ianthus and 2 months of MPX. Our pro forma revenue, which is a more accurate reflection of the quarter, was $18.5 million for the quarter. On a comparative basis, our pro forma revenue has grown 22% from Q4 2018. This pro forma number, which is detailed in Table 2 of the press release, includes the full impact of our closed MPX transaction and our announced CBD for Life transaction, as if they were consolidated as of the beginning of the quarter, in addition to managed revenues in the states of Arizona, Colorado, and New Mexico. Managed revenue includes operations where we have management contract and or licensed operations, which we are unable to consolidate under IFRS. Of our $5.4 million of managed revenue, approximately $1.4 million relates to legacy Ianthus operations in Colorado and New Mexico, and approximately $3.7 relates to licensed MPX operations in the Southwest, which we needed to reclassify to managed revenue due to IFRS reporting standards. There has been no change to the MPX operations that are incorporated in managed revenue. It is simply an IFRS reporting standard. I would also like to pre-announce our April pro forma revenue, which is coming at $8.5 million for the month. Our April revenue should give you a sense that our sequential growth from Q4 to Q1 to April have continued to be strong and are setting a good foundation for Q2 and the remainder of 2019. During Q4, our average monthly revenue was approximately $5 million a month. During Q1, it was approximately $6 million a month. And April has brought in $8.5 million. Our April revenues put our current run rate at $102 million, with significant growth catalysts still waiting ahead. Moving to gross profit, our gross profit for the quarter was $540,000. We have provided detail around our adjusted gross profit of $3.4 million in Table 3, given one-time fair value adjustments due to the MPX acquisition. Our adjusted gross margin for Q1 was 36%, which we believe to be an apples-to-apples comparative calculation with our MSO peers. Within our operating expenses, the company recorded expenses of $23.2 million for the quarter, of which we classify $18.9 million as cash expenses after adjusting for share-based compensation and depreciation and amortization. $5.2 million of these expenses were related directly to the MPX acquisition. I want to quickly walk you through some of our expense lines and comment how we are continuing to be focused on synergies and efficiencies as we more than doubled the size of our business between Q4 and Q1. Quarter over quarter, our G&A expenses increased by 68% to $4.1 million due to the merging of the Ianthus and MPX companies. This will be an area that we will continue to synergize as we eliminate duplicative vendors and other overhead. Our salaries and employee benefits increased by 76% to $6.1 million, even though our workforce expanded by over 200% between October to the present day. Our professional expenses increased by 19% to $3.5 million, despite the fact we were merging two complex entities, legal restructuring of former MPX entities, and the marketing expenses involved in the launch of our unified dispensary brand B. Our adjusted EBITDA loss for the quarter was $5.1 million. These details are also laid out in Table 3 of our press release. And lastly, for our income statement, our net loss for the quarter was $18.3 million, which equates to a net loss of 15 cents per share. During the quarter, we deployed approximately $13 million of CapEx in support of our operations. As of March 31st, 2019, total assets amounted to $797 million. This represents an increase of almost $630 million, or 374% over year-end. The company's current cash balance is approximately $44 million U.S. The company also has the potential to receive over $116 million of proceeds from the exercise of warrants and options that have been issued by the company. Our fixed asset and real estate base is also at $81 million, which we believe will be beneficial as we continue to discuss debt and alternative financing sources to fund our expansion plans and minimize further dilution. The company closed $35 million and $25 million of financing through the issuance of convertible debentures on March 18th and May 1st, respectively. The debentures are convertible at a price of $5.92 U.S. and bear 40% warrant coverage, which resulted in the issuance of approximately 3.7 million warrants with an exercise price of $6.43 U.S. On April 24th, Ianthus issued 8.9 million shares and 4.4 million warrants to satisfy remaining legacy MPX OID loan holders that were eligible for conversion. Our current fully diluted share count is 245.5 million shares, which includes approximately 155 million common shares, 15 million Class A shares, and 76 million dilutive securities. Now, just turning over to operations. Ianthus is generating revenue in 9 of our states, with the two exceptions being California and New Jersey at this point. I would like to emphasize that operations in 5 of those states already have scale, brand awareness, a built-out infrastructure that has been purpose-built to enable Ianthus's market leadership. These 5 states, namely Massachusetts, Florida, Maryland, Arizona, and Nevada, will form the basis of my operational comments. In Massachusetts, we continue to have our flagship Boston facility open for medical sales and remain focused on being able to sell recreational products in Q3 from this location. We have already successfully completed our public hearing for the location and are working with the City of Boston to move the process along. In Worcester, I'm also pleased to announce that yesterday we received our provisional license from the Cannabis Control Commission for a dispensary there. In Lowell, we've agreed to a medical host community agreement and are awaiting signature on a recreational host community agreement. We anticipate Worcester and Lowell to open in the second half of 2019 pending regulatory authorization. Despite the slow-moving regulatory process with regard to dispensaries, we're moving full steam ahead in other areas. We've continued to develop our wholesale program and currently sell to 15 dispensaries within the state. In fact, during the month alone, we recorded over $2 million of retail and wholesale sales. Another statistic that I want to call out, during Q1, our 36,000-square-foot Holliston cultivation facility recorded an average cash cost of $1.24 per gram. I believe that this number really stands on its own amongst indoor growers in the U.S. despite a footprint of only 36,000 square feet. We will also drive these efficiencies at our second cultivation facility within Mass, which is 40,000 square feet and located in Fall River. Concluding my comments on Massachusetts, we feel very confident that our efforts will position us as one of the market leaders within the state. We have three of the best retail locations. We have over 75,000 square feet of cultivation square footage, the MPX product set, and a growing network of wholesale customers. In Florida, we have three open dispensaries with two planned for opening in June and another in early July, which will make for six open dispensaries within the next 45 days. Our dispensary and delivery sales in Florida have been strong, and based on the statewide sales reports that have been made publicly available by the Office of Medical Marijuana Use, the company is ranked third of all Florida operators in terms of THC milligrams sold per dispensary. We've always communicated that we're focused on building a leading market position, and this initial data helps confirm that our locations and product sets are gaining significant traction. Of the 17 dispensaries that will open in the remainder of 2019, three of which I just mentioned, which are opening in the next 45 days, we have leases and locations fully secured, and we believe that these prime locations will serve us well. In order to stock our dispensaries, we have continued to build out our cultivation square footage. As of today, we have 120,000 square feet operational, which is up from 85,000 square feet at the end of April. Our cultivation space has been designed to enable indoor cultivation as well as a lower cost cultivation environment that will drive both quality and expense efficiency. In Maryland, we have three open dispensaries and an active processing facility that supplies to over 51 dispensaries in the state. Our processing facility is undergoing an upgrade both in footprint and equipment. Production capabilities will double, which will also enable continued penetration of the Maryland market. Our production is also being upgraded to produce live and cured resin product lines, which are currently some of the MPX bestsellers in Nevada and Arizona. We believe that these product launches will further establish Ianthus as one of the premier retailers and wholesalers within the state. In our southwest region, specifically Arizona and Nevada, the company's wholesale offerings continue to be strongly received in both markets, selling to approximately 40 dispensaries per month in Q1 and 46 dispensaries in April. Average size of wholesale orders have increased by 100% in Nevada and 25% in Arizona since Q1 2018. Just this week, the Arizona Supreme Court ruled in favor of the medical marijuana industry and patients who choose to use cannabis extracts such as vape cartridges, edibles, waxes, and tinctures. Extracts form a significant portion of the Arizona medical use market, and the court's 7-0 ruling reflects the overwhelming support in the market for continued access to these products. The company is in the final stages of developing a fighter brand concentrate product line that will be marketed to both retail patients and wholesale clients. The company is also about to launch a live resin collaboration with one of the most renowned cultivators within the state, and will continue to keep the market informed as to new product developments. We also continue to move forward with the development of our 2018 Nevada dispensary wins and are targeting the completion of two dispensaries by the end of the year. And just to quickly run down three other states. In New York, the company opened two dispensaries in the first quarter of 2019 and has signed a lease for its third dispensary located on Staten Island. This will be the only licensed dispensary serving Staten Island's 500,000 residents and should open in the fourth quarter of this year. The company eagerly awaits further clarity as the development of both the medical and recreational programs within the state. With regard to New Jersey, we continue to monitor regulatory developments and are well underway with our plans to finance operations within the state. Similar to other operators, we were disappointed to see that a recreational bill did not come to fruition, but remain optimistic as to the short-term prospects of an expanded medical and eventual recreational program. In Colorado, we were also excited to see this week that the recent public company bill was signed by Governor Polis that will provide a pathway for Ianthus to consolidate our operations in the state as well. And lastly, some concluding notes on CBD for Life. Ianthus is in the final steps of closing its acquisition of CBD for Life, a top-ranked national CBD brand in the U.S., and we're targeting to close in early June. CBD for Life is now available in over 1,000 stores nationwide. In addition, CBD for Life will be rolling out a premium product line and an adult line this summer. Results for April for CBD for Life were approximately $400,000, and for the month of May, over $550,000. Hadley, back to you.
Thank you, Julius. At this point, we would like to open it up for questions from our investors. So please put yourself in the line, and we will take them one at a time.
If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Your first question comes from Robert Fagan with GMP Securities.
Thanks, guys, for taking my questions. I guess I was hoping we could just look at the pro forma numbers for the quarter. And is there a way you could give us maybe an insight into pro forma EBITDA for Q1? And I know it's a bit challenging, but that number, be excluding biological asset gains or including?
Hey, Robert, it's Julius. Yeah, at this point, given some of the complexity around the kind of mixed quarter still with sort of some of the legacy MPX and all being consolidated, beyond what we've provided for the full quarter, it's beyond what we've provided in our press release, that's going to be the maximum that we're providing in terms of detail around that. For Q2, obviously, with sort of both businesses fully consolidated at that point, we're going to have or be able to provide a lot more clarity what the breakdown is, especially as we started to separate and synergize some of those MPX costs.
Okay. Well, maybe just a quick follow-on on that. If there was a pro forma EBITDA number for the quarter, would that have been somewhat in line, you think, with your reported, or would have it improved or maybe gotten worse? Just trying to understand the margin contribution from the combination of the firms.
Sure. So, yes. With the sort of month or the missing month of MPX, right, January, which we couldn't consolidate, that would have improved EBITDA, just given some of the status of some of those operations, especially in Arizona and Nevada, which have just been sort of longer term operations or been in business longer, as opposed to some of the Ianthus operations, such as, for instance, Florida, which is massively ramping up for these dispensaries, which are obviously still on the have a different EBITDA profile. So if you were to include sort of month one of MPX, it would have improved EBITDA for the quarter.
Okay. No, thanks for that insight. That's helpful. Moving on to the comments you made about April's pro forma number and then accelerating into May, I wonder if you might be able to share what kind of acceleration and just to kind of get a picture of how much higher your pro forma annualized sales could be than that $100 million mark roughly right now.
Yeah, so in terms of April, we're pleased to note that May results continue to be very strong. As we look at April, and obviously in this industry, April tends to be one of the busiest months at dispensaries given 420, and we're pleased to see that May continues to be strong and remain optimistic around sort of closing out the quarter in June. So you're going to continue to see a good Q2, and I think obviously you're aware of some of these catalysts that we've mentioned, especially in the state of Florida, and continued catalysts within Massachusetts. Those are going to be big revenue drivers throughout the remainder of the year. As I provided a little bit of comment just around the three open dispensaries that we have in Florida, All that is publicly available in terms of our sort of volume sales of THC milligrams per dispensary. We're really focused on, as we open doors, that these are going to be vibrant doors that are generating revenue, and you're going to see that continue to grow in Florida. So there is definitely going to be a few areas across Ianthus that are going to show real significant growth over the remainder of 2019. And I think also, as I mentioned, just in CBD for life specifically, right, you're starting to see that growth, whether from Q1 to April, and then even just sort of providing those numbers for what May looks like as well.
Great. So those trends are quite encouraging. Last one for me is, I thought, you know, the amount of wholesale penetration you guys are getting is very impressive, and we appreciate that color across the different states. Just wondering, is what's driving that? Is that like the strength of perhaps the product brands that you have, and, you know, particular MPX, or is that a sales team effort that's getting that good penetration? Just wondering how you're driving your wholesale and how we can think about that going forward.
Sure. So if I look at it in some of the key states that are out there, Arizona, Nevada, Maryland, those three, there is a very, very strong brand presence with MPX. And there is a wholesale team in place, and that team has continued to be bulked up. And so they're out there working the various dispensary networks, and they also have a little bit of a legacy, but that's something that we're continuing to see within this quarter, and you'll continue to see it through the remainder of the year. In the case of Massachusetts, I think the reason that we're excited around Mass for ourselves, and I think everyone else, is that is just an incredibly vibrant market right now. We like what's happening in our own dispensary. We like our other dispensary locations, but there's product shortages across the state, and there are other MSOs. There's other operators who are coming directly to us looking for our product that they haven't scaled up quickly enough, and we've become a go-to person within that state as well.
Great. Good work, guys. Okay, thanks again.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Brett Hundley with Seaport Global.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my questions.
Good morning, Brett.
Good morning. Julius, I just want to make sure that I heard you correctly. So that $3.7 million of licensed MPX revenue, that is effectively missing from the reported 9.6 number, correct?
Yeah, we've classified it in, I believe it's Table 2, yes, under managed revenue. So that would have been revenue that in the legacy MPX, that they would have reported within IFRS reported revenue. They had different auditors than we have, and we've always taken a conservative approach to how we've looked at our financials. And working with our auditors, we believe at this point it's better classified as managed revenue.
Perfect. Thank you for clarifying that. And I can appreciate maybe wanting to wait until Q2 to give further color on future financials. You know, as some of us sit around and try and update our models at this point in time, can you maybe give us some information related to how many stores you think you might have in place across the network by the end of this year? If you can break that out across Legacy and MPX, it'd be really helpful.
Sure. This is Julius. I'll take that one. And Pat, feel free to add in. So first off, just in the case of what we've already communicated to the market, Brett, we've always been clear around our ramp up in Florida. As I mentioned, we have three open, another three opening very quickly. And then we've targeted 20 for the year. Obviously, the 14 will be back-end loaded in sort of the second half of the year, sort of split out between Q3 and Q4. That's going to be one of the sort of significant growth openings in terms of dispensaries. Also mentioned around New York, there's going to be Staten Island that's open in the back half of the year. In Massachusetts, we have one open. There's going to be another two opening, as I mentioned, in the back half of the year. Those are some of the key ones. On the MPX side or on the legacy MPX side, I had mentioned around Nevada. Those will be two open by the end of the year. We had four license wins in Nevada, targeting to get two open by the end of the year. New Jersey is not something that we sort of outlined sort of what the full plans are just yet. We'll be providing further detail around openings and timelines in New Jersey, but we haven't sort of publicly presented that at this point. Pat, I'm not sure if on sort of anything else to add what I've mentioned.
No, I think you covered it well.
Thanks for doing that. I do appreciate it. Related to New Jersey, I mean, are you guys in part still waiting to see how regulations end up there? I think as part of this new medical effort, there's language in the new law potentially that breaks up the vertical integration requirement. I mean, is that something that's on your radar, or is it more just, you know, thinking through where you might want to have locations and going through the business plan with one more swipe again?
Hi, it's Hadley. New Jersey's been an interesting roller coaster. You know, obviously Murphy ran on the platform of having full recreational, and there's been some usual politics that one gets at the local level. So we're monitoring it. You know, we just want to get our stores open. We'd love to have an ability to open more stores on a statewide basis. And that's the way in which we are discussing with our key lobbyists and whatnot. But, you know, we'll see how that develops over the course of the year.
Okay. And then just last one for me, Hadley, I don't know if Beth has input on this too, but as I think about the forward plan related to CBD, can you guys give me your appetite for formulating CBD ingestibles? I know we're going through the first hearing with the FDA today, but what is your approach to the ingestible side of things, and what are your conversations with retailers suggest? I'm really hearing mixed things out there with some retailers that really want to wait on the sidelines and then others that might be willing to take some chances, so to speak. Can you just give us your views there? Thank you.
I'll give a couple of seconds, and I'll just hand it over to Beth, because she obviously has built this business. But, you know, clearly we want to make sure we get through the FDA process. We've not done anything from an edible perspective there, because we want to stay on the right side of what the regulators are going to be providing. But beyond that, Beth, I'll hand it over to you on what some of your partners are saying.
Yeah, I would just echo what Hadley said. We've been super conservative. We want to wait and see, you know, what turns out with the FDA. But I would say that your observations are absolutely correct in what we're seeing in the marketplace. There are some really big retailers that are not nervous at all about taking edible products, and then there are some that are very nervous until we hear from the FDA. So we're gonna just continue to monitor, and you know, I would imagine that if we get a favorable ruling from the FDA, it won't be a long time before you see some edibles coming out from us.
I'm sorry to ask this follow-up. Do you expect that could be soon? I was talking to one industry executive that thought it could happen by this summer. That just seemed aggressive to me.
I would probably say by the end of the year. That would be my guesstimate.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Matthew Pallotta with Echelon Wealth.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Very
morning.
Well. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. I just wanted to touch again on the wholesale side of the business. So you guys are in 110 stores in I believe that's up from about 90 that you reported last quarter. And I know someone asked a question earlier in terms of what you guys are doing to ramp that up, but has there been any sort of hurdles or bottlenecks that you guys have been seeing in maybe in specific states and not others that have you guys have seen that it might impede that process from scaling up into being in more stores? Like perhaps if you're short of supply in the state, you're keeping that supply for your own dispensaries or whatnot. And do you have any internal targets that you guys have set you know, maybe for a few quarters ahead for the amount of doors that you guys want to be in nationally on the THC side?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yes. So in terms of impediments, I think in any state, the only impediments that we truly see are in states like Florida, for instance, where wholesale is not allowed. So that's really, I think, the only impediment that we see that we can't sort of obviously structurally overcome. I think we look in the case of whether it's Arizona or Nevada or Maryland, there's always going to be, or in Massachusetts as well, there's always going to be that balance around what we want to put through our own stores versus what we want to put at wholesale. Putting it through our own stores, obviously, will be able to drive greater margin than selling some products just solely on a wholesale basis. However, it's always an interesting sort of calculation as we look at it, because I think I want to echo Hadley's comments in his preamble that when you're building brands, you want to blanket the market. You want to be a go-to brand, not just within your dispensary, but in other people's dispensaries. So I think there's always going to be the view, and you're not going to see us just solely hoard product for our own dispensaries. We're going to make sure that we're out there broadly, especially in sort of populous markets where there are dispensaries and we have wholesale teams in place to be able to work that over. Hope that
answers. Great. Yeah, absolutely. And on a pro forma basis, for the 18.5 million in revenue, can you break that out between what was sold through your retail channels and then on the wholesale side?
So that is not a breakout that we have done for Q1 or that we're presenting for Q1. I think similar to my earlier comment, it was still a little bit of a split quarter between Ianthus and MPX. I believe for Q2, as we will have firm control over both sides of the business from an operational and accounting perspective for the entire quarter, that will be something that we'll be able to shed a little bit more light on. It's just, once again, we didn't have full accounting control over everything for Q1, just given the timing of the business closing. Well, I think in Q2, we'll be able to have much more comfort around providing that kind of detail to you.
Okay, awesome. And then do you guys have any details on new brands that you guys are looking to roll out? Obviously, you guys have press released the B brand for retail, but on the product side, do you have any plans to roll out new brands to surround, the core MPX brand?
We have plans, but we haven't rolled those out publicly yet. Clearly, as part of the strategy is to have one cohesive retail brand that means something to people, invite them into the store, learn, spend time, become familiar with cannabis. And while they're there, we want to educate them about the different product sets. And the idea would be that many of those product sets would be things like an MPX brand or a Mayflower brand, CBD for Life. So within different categories, we'll have different brands. Those are the pieces that Neil is undertaking to understand now by listening to our customers and looking at what the market is demanding, and we'll roll those out through the course of the year.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Alan Brockstein with MCV Media.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Alan. Alan, how are you?
I'm good. I just have one topic, and then I'll let it be.
you couldn't resist, could you?
Nope. It sounds like Florida is one of the many important drivers, if not the most important, in terms of the rest of this year. And I just had a quick question about that, because yesterday one of your competitors in Florida admitted to some challenges with their own supply. At the same time, earlier this week, I saw another competitor announced an indoor facility to augment their prior greenhouse facility. You guys have one of, I believe, two green indoor facilities in the state. You've talked about that before. So my question is basically, how confident are you guys? It sounds like you're real confident on the retail side. How confident are you that you're given that the state doesn't allow wholesale, that you're going to be able to fill your stores?
Alan, that is a absolutely great question. It is one of the issues that exists in Florida. And for those of you who aren't aware, you can't sell or buy wholesale in Florida unless you've had a crop failure, which we haven't had. And one of the issues we've had, despite the fact we've got 35 acres and a 200,000 square foot indoor facility that can be double stacked, to give us a tremendous amount of indoor canopy, and we can have a tremendous amount of greenhouse and capacity on the 35 acres as well. One of the issues has been power, and we have purposely through the first quarter, slowed down some of the openings to retail stores because we were dealing with the power issues. We've now solved that, and we should have as much supply as we need as we get into the late in the third quarter and into the fourth quarter. But it is an issue. I guess it's, you know, as people say, it's a good problem to have, right? The demand curve is such, and customers and patients are demanding products, and specifically flour, that has put some strain, I think, on the supply side of the equation across all the peers in the state. But, you know, a good problem is still a problem, and I think you'll see our competitors expand capacity. Fortunately, we have a very large building, very large amounts of land, and now we have the power piece off with the help of our local energy provider, and we expect to be able to have product on all the shelves of the stores that we open up going forward.
Right,
go ahead, Pat. Go ahead. Yeah,
I was just going to augment that. I was just in Florida this week doing the normal review, and while we do have the power solution at the site now, we still have some infrastructure work, which will keep us running lean through the summer. But I was really excited to get the results of our latest build-out review, and we were throwing around some numbers yesterday. Our total flowering plant capacity should be nearly quadrupling by the end of the summer timeframe. So we're pretty confident, but we still have some infrastructure issues to address because of the prior issues Hadley mentioned, to make sure that the site's completely wired correctly. It's going to be some challenges during the summer, but we're very confident heading into the fall period.
Great. Thanks a lot. That's it for me.
Next question comes from Shan Meir with Canaccord Genuity.
Good morning, guys, and congrats on the quarter, and thanks for taking my question. Just touching, I think I may have missed this. My call dropped earlier, but just touching on that April pro forma number, the $8.5 million there, I just wanted to get some clarity on kind of how we should be modeling this going forward. I know you mentioned that May saw a step-up. I wanted to get an idea of what the magnitude of that step-up was and kind of how we should be looking at that for the balance of the year.
Hey, Shan, good morning. Yes, so in terms of April and whether May, in some ways we're already getting out beyond what Q1 has been in providing sort of just even April detail. So we're not providing sort of any specific numbers around May at this point. April is always, as I mentioned before, one of the busiest months in the year. But we're quite excited to see that April was not just a one-time thing. It wasn't a fluke, that May has continued to be strong. And then obviously with some of these other big catalysts, especially the regulatory ones within Massachusetts, those are going to be big drivers as we get those stores open or are allowed to open those stores from a regulatory perspective. Also, as I mentioned, those are three of the best locations, we believe, within the state. Boston, we should be either the first or one of the first recreational stores to open within proper. And Lowell and Worcester, which will also be opening in the back half of the year, that's second largest city and the fourth largest city within the state. Those are big drivers. It's just sort of a timing driver. Obviously, Florida, as I mentioned, but just sort of wrapping up around that, April was strong. May continues to be strong. We're going to finish off the quarter well. And then just in terms of some of those other timelines, a lot of them regulatory driven, that's what's going to determine sort of what the remainder of the year continues to look like. But I think as we get on this call in 3 months from now, we're always going to have a lot more clarity, especially as we've been managing the business for the full quarter at that point.
For sure. On the Massachusetts side, just because you brought that up, I know a lot of your competitors over the week were talking about the dispensaries in Massachusetts and how the adult use regulation has kind of been a little bit of a headwind in achieving their 2019 numbers. And you'd mentioned that your Alliston facility or location is one that you're in talks right now of getting adult use legislation or approval. And the Worcester and Lowell dispensaries as well. You want to open with adult use. And so just kind of on those facilities, are you expecting any sort of meaningful contribution in 2019 or just getting the licensing in the year?
Yeah, So from my perspective, and I sort of echoed this when I was talking about the kind of operational updates in some of the states, our view around Massachusetts is that that is going to be one of the most robust states in the U.S., whether 2019, 2020. We have been preparing for it for a long time. We have had that cultivation facility in Holliston open since the beginning of January, and as I made the point, whether it was around the cash cost of cultivation at $1.24 for this quarter, we're focused on churning out amazing product, amazing biomass at low prices. And whether we're selling on a wholesale basis right now or on a retail basis, we believe that this is a market that we want to get the Ianthus brand out there, the MPX brand out there, first off on the wholesale side, and then as we continue to flip those dispensaries over to recreational or open Lowell and Worcester, we're going to be well prepared for that. We're going to have the product. We're going to as well have brand awareness within the state, because even before we open Lowell and Worcester, as I made the point, we're already selling to 15 dispensaries. We're getting our name and our brand out there, and we think that's going to serve us well. So whether it's on the wholesale or on the retail side, we haven't wasted any time in terms of proving ourselves within that state.
Perfect. And just the last one from me, just stepping back to some of the commentary from the last earnings call, I know Hadley mentioned then that you had opened in the last 8 months 7 dispensaries, and that you'd be increasing that clip by twofold. So I just wanted to get an idea of when that inflection point would happen. I think this quarter there was 2 dispensary openings, if I'm correct, and kind of an idea of where the bulk of those openings are coming from. I think Florida would probably be a major player there, but just any color around that.
Yes.
JJ, you want to handle that?
Yeah, just to reiterate, so there's, as I had mentioned, there's going to be three in Florida that are imminent. We still have another 16, as I mentioned, that will continue to open in the back half of the year. I also want to make the point around that, and I made it before, those are all signed and secured locations and leases. We had a head start versus some of our peers, and we've secured really prime real estate for dispensary locations. So you're going to see that inflection point in the back half of the year. I would say that's the first one. Obviously, we just spoke about Massachusetts. There's going to be a couple in Nevada in Q4. Beth already answered around New Jersey. So it is definitely sort of in the second half of this year, but we feel very, very confident about the groundwork that we've done in terms of securing locations, whether in New York State, whether in Florida, whether within Mass.
Perfect. Thanks again for taking my questions, and congratulations on the quarter.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Andrew Kessner with William O'Neill.
Hey, thanks for taking the question. To follow up on Florida, it looks like you guys are performing better than most of your peers in terms of milligrams of THC sold per store. But since that weekly report from the state doesn't include flower yet, do you have a sense of what percentage of your sales are flower at this point? Or perhaps given the ongoing production ramp up, do you have any thoughts about what the product mix might be once you're at a more normalized production?
So, Julius, you want me to take that?
All yours.
Yeah, so I want to caution what I'm about to say because of the limitations that we've had in capacity. We were first to market on the flower in the pre-roll side, and we've made a big foray. However, our capacity in the next couple of months for flower specifically is somewhat limited given the infrastructure challenges that we mentioned before. So what we're seeing in May is a little over 50%. That is going to be consistent, I think, or in that sort of 40 to 55% range with other states where it's available. And so that would be my anticipation. It's been a hit. The social media is abuzz with the quality and the price points that we're offering out there. And we're seeing a very good response. However, it is tapered, in fact, per my prior comment, in that over the next couple of months over the summer, we will be challenged on the flower side, but we're doing everything we can to meet the sort of that built-in demand that we've now created through the release. And come that end of summer period, I feel very confident in our ability to crank out the products that our patients require.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. And then can you talk a bit about your outlook or your hopes for New York? One of your competitors yesterday expressed a lot of optimism about the potential for an expansion of the state's medical market rather than a full adult use market in the near term, at least. So, you know, expansion in terms of products allowed and possibly the store cap per company. Do you have any thoughts around that, or perhaps on what would be a best case scenario for you guys as far as how things play out in the state over the next year or two?
JK, you want to talk about that, or would you like me to talk about it?
Well, why don't you dive in, and then I can add on some specific comments. You can speak around some of the regulatory, how you see it developing.
Yeah, you know, like most of the states, it just becomes political at the local level. I think, you know, clearly the voters in and most any of the states that we participate in would like to see sort of more more access to cannabis rather than less. You know, within New York, adult use is still possible, but it's a little bit unclear. You know, one of the issues that has existed has been, from a social equity perspective, just the limited number of players that are allowed. And, you know, I think the industry needs to address that. I think the politicians need to address that. You know, clearly, you know, when you've limited the number of dispensaries to the amount that we have in the state currently, that provides a lot of unintended consequences. So, you know, our view is over time, you're going to have a full rec program. It's probably going to be a lot more open than it currently is. And we think that that actually benefits and plays right into our strategy. You know, we would like to have markets that have broad retail distribution, broad retail ownership and inclusion, because all those retail stores and relationships are going to need good products to carry, and we're going to be a big provider of those. So, you know, we'll look and see. It's not dissimilar from every state that we're in. We monitor, we have conversations. At the end of the day, these things always take a little bit longer than everyone anticipates. That answer your question?
Yep, that does. That's all for me. So thank you guys, and good luck.
At this time, I will turn the call over to Hadley Ford.
Great. Thank you very much. And thank you all for dialing in today to listen. Just a couple of things as I wrap up. You know, I was struck as I was listening to Julius go through the first quarter earnings, just how much progress we've made over the course of the last year. You know, if you go back a year ago, or even just go back to the third quarter of 2018, we really just had de minimis revenue. I think, as you're all aware, you know, many of our peers have been in business for many, many more years than we have. And we've really had to come on and ramp the company and grow the company quite aggressively over the last 12 months. You know, I think in the third quarter, we had less than $500,000 a month of revenue. And now it's a much different story. We're right in the thick of it, you know, within April with over $8.5 million of revenue. You know, I think we've shown we can grow quickly. And I think more importantly, we can grow quickly and manage that growth very efficiently. To go from 50 employees at the start of last year to 550, to go from 40 or 50 million of assets to over 700 million of assets, and maintain the type of growth and discipline and delighting of our customers, I think is a testament to the great, great, great team that we have here. You know, we were the first MSO to go public. People thought we were crazy 3 years ago. We told people we were going to do that. We did that. We pioneered the raising of capital within the public markets for a U.S. operator. We said we're going to use our stock to acquire wonderful companies and merge with folks and develop a footprint so we could drive that retail presence. We've done that. We've said that we're going to be able to operate, and now we're showing that. We do what we say. We get up every day. We work for you. We appreciate your trust and support. We are Ianthus, IAN on the CSE, ITHUF on the OTC, undervalued on both. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your support and trust.
And this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.